Hello, this is Yisachar Wartel, Gudvach. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayishlach. And I wanted to just give you a couple words and thoughts on the parsha. There's obviously so much to talk about, but talk about just a couple things in particular. Esav, who is certainly the primary focus at the beginning of this week's parsha, seemingly has three names. He actually has his name Esav. He's also called Edom as well as Seir. One of the times this can be seen clearly is in the first week's first pasuk of this week's parsha, which is Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Afanav El Esav. That's one Achiv Arza Seir to the land of Seir Sedeh Edom, which was in the field of Edom. There's a long-standing debate, actually, as to the discussion as to where exactly these lands were, and if they were, in fact, the same, meaning Seir and Edom, but it is clear that they belong to the same people, the descendants of Esav. Now, Torah and the Chazal also repeatedly refer to Esav or his descendants by both of these two names. And the name Esav, as Rashi explains, is a variation of the word Asu, meaning made. And this refers to the concept that Esav was already born in a mature state, both with respect to his development, meaning more so his ruddy complexion, perhaps, and also to the amount of hair on his body. Edom comes from Adom, which means red. Let me clarify. The Asu, I guess, would have to be his more complex features and his hair, and whereas Edom refers to Adom, meaning his red complexion, but also his quote-unquote red personality. The color red is symbolic of bloodlust, passion, and general intensity. And this is something which was seen very strongly in Esav, even from his birth. The third name of Seir can mean goat, but ultimately stems from the root Seir, meaning hair. Esav was a physically hairy individual, but it goes far beyond that. So in order to explore this, I brainstormed with my occasional learning partner, Isaac, or Yitzchak Kotlicki, who I've written numerous Divrei Torah with, or at least collaborated with on multiple occasions. And he put forth the notion that in stark contrast to Yaakov and the Jewish people in general, Esav did not want to and did not need to grow. He was already fully made. He was Asu, Esav. He says, Yesh li rav, I have enough. He was who he was and had no desire to change. Much of the purpose of all of mankind is in fact to strive for growth, to develop, to constantly build and better oneself. Ultimately, Esav became the father of two primary nations. One, which was primarily known as Edom, and that largely became, the Roman Empire and Western society, and the other one is Amalek, and these are actually quite different from each other. Amalek was and is militantly atheist and is against the notion of positive development for the sake of growth. They believe everything is circumstantial or at best in the hands of man. Edom, as epitomized by Roman society, had a striving for development and had strong desires to be fulfilled. But, so even though they did want to grow and did want to develop, they were ultimately of a selfish and largely impure nature. That part of Esav that was fully content to fall to the whims of reality became Amalek, but the part which was most relevant to the everyday world was Edom and its related land of Seir. Seir, as previously mentioned, relates to the concept of hair, from Seir. It is intriguing that the hair and the nails are actually the only part of the body that continue to grow after a person is deceased, and in essence are themselves a quasi-buildup of dead cells rather than live dynamic cells. At the same time, Jewish mysticism explains that the hair and nails have a certain life force within them that is different than any other parts of the body. Hair, therefore, is one of the mysterious and many dichotomies of life, but it was suggested, I believe, through my friend Isaac, that perhaps that one could think of them as a continuous motion, because they just kind of keep growing and keep growing and keep growing, and it's not anything that's particularly straightforward. I mean, other than straightforward, it doesn't like go in different directions that have all these complexities. It just kind of goes on its path, right? Hair gets longer, nails get longer. The state of a hair at its outset will perpetuate its original identity onwards. It just keeps going, right? Same thing with nails for the most part. However, Yaakov himself grew righteously in Tahara, purity, and therefore had the momentum to continue in purity, right? So he had some elements of this hair or nails, if you will, but Esav steeped himself in this, in a tumadika, in an impure way, and therefore it really had to continue in a level of Tumah. So they both had in a sense of perpetuity, that Yaakov started with purity and just kept going on and on in purity and was growing in a sense of purity, whereas Esau kept growing in a sense of Tumah. Obviously, it's more complex than that, but that's essentially summarizing the point in a nutshell. In Parshat Todah, when Yitzchak was initially wished to give the blessing, the bracha, to Esav, he knew that Esav was the ear, that Esav was hairy, and was so that Yaakov had to dress as his hairy brother, and Yitzchak had to, quote-unquote, feel him. He understood that Esav had begun at least somewhat of a wicked path and would be driven to continue it, and therefore he hopes that perhaps the bracha, along with the influence of Yaakov, could perhaps curb that and change it. But we did not realize was that Esav truly was Asu. He was already made who he was, and he wasn't going to change. It was going to be almost literally impossible, not 100%, but almost impossible to change him. But what Yitzchak truly missed was Esav's redness, his Edom qualities. The intense, lawless passion and drive for lust and blood coursing through Esav's veins was a threat to Yaakov and the Jewish role in the whole world, the whole mission that this blessing or bracha was supposed to contain. Thus, when Esav later appeared to get his bracha, Yitzchak shuddered greatly, ad me'od, to the ultimate degree. This word me'od can actually be arranged to form Edom, Aleph, Dalet, Mem. He finally saw the true redness of Esav, and when Esav realizes that his brother had tricked him, he screams also out, ad me'od. He disregarded his pre-made state of Esav and actually disrupted the momentum, quote-unquote, of Seir for a small time and was exposed as a raw, red individual. Through this window, he actually really then became truly sincere and therefore begged his father for a blessing, because he was willing to expose himself. He was for once vulnerable, and perhaps if he had actually let this vulnerability shape him as a lesson in humility, he might have actually had some possible ability to change. Yet his redness ultimately overtook him, and he became consumed with hatred and vengeance on a mission to kill his brother, as we see shaping further at the beginning of this week's parsha. Therefore, so many years later, when Yaakov is going to reunite with his brother, he does not know what state his brother is in. Is he self-made and complacent? Is he perpetually immoral? Is he still in a state of anger and bloodlust, in a state of red? Which one is it? Is he therefore not only sends three sets of messengers, each bearing a different set of gifts, but also three messages? And Yaakov sent messengers, or angels, before him to Esau, his brother, to the land of Seir, to the field of Edom, all three. Yaakov was approaching him on all fronts and wanted to be prepared. Which Esav actually came to Yaakov is a matter of interpretation, but was likely a mix of all three. When Esav initially refuses Yaakov's gift, he says it's because of Yishli Rav, I have enough. He is pre-made, he is good. But he was still both Edom and Seir. In fact, the words Seir Edom can be reformed to make the words Ashir Me'od, very rich. For Esav felt he had plenty and didn't need more, but greedy ones also want more, and so he did eventually go on to accept Yaakov's gifts. Perhaps this was brother cordiality. Perhaps this was the continued momentum of Seir, being greedy. And perhaps Esav was willing to, in a sense, actually pardon Yaakov for what happened over 30 years earlier. But if so, then why was he bringing 400 men? Perhaps Esav himself was actually not sure of which version of himself would surface, as he was so complex of an individual, implying that the hatred against his brother was at least still there in his part, so that Esav was worried about it. And when Yaakov and Esau finally part ways, the Torah writes, "V'yisha b'yomahu Esau v'darko Seir," and Esau returned on that day on his way to Seir. V'darko can also mean to his way, back to his way. Esau reverted back to his normal ways because that's who he was. But he went forwards to Seir, meaning he continued to grow like a hare, perpetuating these negative traits further and further throughout the generations. But its essence was still Edom, right? The body may be Esau and the land may be Seir, but ultimately, the majority of the nation of the lineage and what stemmed from Edom that really continued to endure and shape the world was the nation that was solely known as Edom, or ultimately the Roman Empire. These red traits were seen clearly throughout history, and although they did have these growth and intriguing developments, were often seen in horrible cruelties, most notably in the Roman Empire. Yet while Rome clearly perpetuated their horrible traits and committed barbaric acts, they also actually contributed mightily to many engineering and agricultural fields that actually make much of technology and our way of life possible today. So even though Edom was evil, they were not a Moloch. They still had elements of growth and dynamic and elements of change, even if most of it was from an impure place or a selfish place. Even Edom, even Esau, has sparks of good deep within him, because the essence of Edom, is Adam, mankind, and mankind is still made B'Tzelem Elohim. Only the ones who explicitly reject that and refuse to grow and change in any regard and take any responsibility for anything, meaning Amalek, only those are the ones who we have to put aside. But everybody else still has a potential spark. So on those notes, let's try and bring more positivity, look at people ideally through a lens of potential, and Shabbat Shalom.